All right, Brian, what do you say? We take it to the max. Thank you again for joining me. I know it's the take it to the max. Let's do this. So Brian View, you are the president and COO of FinLocker. Walk me through a little bit of your history. How did you find yourself in the president and COO position there?
So I'm a career mortgage guy, and I wrote my first mortgage in 1991 as a loan officer. Spent 3 decades in the primary mortgage production space. A lot of it in executive senior management, always managing production channels and teams. And about six and a half years ago, maybe 7 years ago, friends of mine founded FinLocker, and I was intrigued by what they were up to. But I've, spent a lot of my time in kind of, I'll call it today, the cushy corporate environment, and not so much in the entrepreneurial space. And so I kind of was observing what they were up to, and, that was about it. I invested a little bit of money just to keep it interesting. And I don't know, six years ago, we started having a conversation about the business and about what they were up to and where the product was heading. And at the same time, I think as I look back, I was had the itch maybe to just try take a place a bet on myself, right? More than I had in my past, and I didn't really have. I'm not a an inventor, so I don't come up with that these crazy ideas and then go start a company. And so, FinLocker was like the closest thing I could get to having a founder kind of role. And so I rolled the dice and left Flagstar Bank, where I was at the time, to join this startup, this fintech startup. And it was at the same time. So this is like the summer of 2019. And if you recall, that was not such a great time in mortgage. I mean, it was had some challenges, and the market, the rates were slowly making their way back up at the time. And even then, as I look back now, loan officers, were trying to reinvent themselves in some ways in their communities and their markets. And so I just felt like where FinLocker was headed from a product perspective could align really well with where I thought the market was going. And so I made the leap, joined the company in the summer of 19, fast forward to the spring of 2020, and the world changed as we all know it. If we were doing this today, you wouldn't see my face because I'd have a mask on. talk about like thrown right into the fire, join a fintech startup, think we have product market fit, start to get some traction. And then this, worldwide pandemic hits and literally shuts everything down for some extended period of time. And then does the opposite in our business, sends rates through the floor. And anybody that I had wanted to get in front of to talk about our product was too busy with volume and refis. And so they had no capacity. So we spent a lot of time, in our own little laboratory working on a product while the rest of the market was cranking out, mortgages. And I don't even know where I was going with this, but I think fast forward to today, we're back to this market where loan officers, I do believe, are trying to reinvent themselves in their communities. There's a ton of really interesting personal branding strategies that are taking place, which I think is super smart. Mm-hmm. And then our technology aligns well with that mindset. So I'm a pro loan officer guy. I'm a pro local loan officer guy. I believe that there's no better resource for consumers, especially first time homebuyers, and more so, especially early journey first time homebuyers, like people that are 6, 12, 18 months away from being ready to buy. There's no better resource for them to be engaged with than a local loan officer to help them be financially and emotionally prepared for buying their first home, getting their first big loan, and then having to manage, you know, manage all things home ownership.
There are a couple of points that I want to trace down in what you just said. So number one, for anyone who may be listening, who doesn't know what FinLocker does, do you mind just giving a little brief snapshot of what it is, the service that you provide?
Thanks for reining me in there. So we're a B2B2C software company. Our primary client is our mortgage originators and loan officers, so lenders and their loan officers. And our technology is really meant to be an extension of the loan officer. Mm-hmm. And that extension is really around where loan officers seek to educate and engage and nurture people that are not yet ready to buy today, right? So we are not really, our technology doesn't really exist in the middle of the loan manufacturing process from, you know, application through closing. We're to the left of the loan application process, right? That 6 to 18 month window where a consumer's not ready to apply. They're just trying to figure out what they would qualify for, what they should be doing over the next 18 months to prepare, you know, to buy a home. And so our technology is a financial fitness app that has a homeownership focus. And it's a branded, it's a white label app. So it's branded to the lender. And then furthermore, presents the loan officer as the hero in the app for the consumer. So we don't, you know, we're not trying to replace loan officers. We're trying to scale how many consumers a loan officer can have in this getting ready status, if you will.
It really is meant to be an accompanying piece to making the LO's job easier on preparing their borrowers to get ready to make this giant financial investment.
That's right.
I do think it is underutilized. I don't think enough LOs are employing it. And I think they're really missing out on the lead gen opportunities that come with using FinLocker for that very reason. You're not in a big brother type of role, right? You're there to allow them to monitor where their borrowers are at so that they can kind of keep a consistent pulse on where their borrower is. And it's such a strong value add. I think that's another thing that so many people are really trying to redefine in this market. It is, what do their value adds look like?
Yeah.
Why should people be using them instead of just going straight to a mass lender? What is the benefit of having your LO next door? So I think that this is a fantastic opportunity that so many people really need to be considering right now, because let's be honest, 2025 is a year where people are going to have to get creative to get deals done and to really nurture that first time home buyer group. They are going to take more handholding, in my opinion, than a lot of previous generations of first-time home buyers. Our inventory is still extremely low. Prices are extremely high, coupled with interest rates, coupled with baby boomers who are refusing to leave their houses and release those homes back into the market.
I'm not a boomer, but
that is what's happening.
Yeah.
And then we have this massive millennial market that is coming in as first-time home buyers with Gen Z right on their heels. There's so much opportunity, but it is going to take a lot of nurturing and education. So I know that is an area that we both see huge opportunity in.
It's massive. I want to share a couple data points with you. I would encourage the audience to go find these resources I'm going to reference. The first one is, I think it was in December, Boston Consulting Group, BCG, put out their annual kind of state of housing finance. So it's just it's their assessment. You know, their readout on the market. And it's really obvious now as I look at some of these quotes that they had in there, but in their white paper, they talked about the purchase market, the purchase transaction, truly being the backbone of a sustainable mortgage business, right?
Yeah,
for a long time, I remember the business would be 70 to 80% purchase, 20 to 30% refi. There's only been a few like windows in our industry over time where it was the inverted the other way. Mm-hmm. You know, one was, you know, the 2008 crisis and the feds had to buy up a bunch of MBS and that took mortgage rates down. And the other was a global pandemic that resulted in the same thing. Beyond that, the normal, you know, 70, 30, you know, 85, whatever, the purchase mix being mostly more purchase and refi is a normal market. And so what BCG said, which I thought was awesome, they said purchase originations are demographically driven, less rate dependent, and less volatile than refinance volumes, right? And so if you're building a business, I mean, everyone would agree, yeah, we love refis, but I would love to build a business that's, you know, confidently repeatable like year over year. And so that's what you get in a purchase business. But now to go into some of your points around this big millennial and Gen Z bubble, today there's 8.8 million mortgages in the US over 6%. But many of those homeowners aren't moving. You already called out the boomers. Way to go.
Sorry.
We know, and they talk about home affordability being the biggest barrier today, not lack of desire. People want to own homes, but affordability is a challenge. And then the last thing, and this goes into, you know, to me, the value of a loan officer, Gen Z is the most financially anxious generation ever. Right. But they still want to buy homes. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, how do we help people that are otherwise anxious over this transaction? We help them with empathy and education and patience. And I think patience is a big component of that. Right. Yeah. So that was one study I would go out and look at, the Boston Consulting Group year-end study. The other was J.D. Power released their 2024 mortgage origination satisfaction study right around the same time. I want to say it was in, if it was late December, or early January. One thing that really stood out for me in their study was they talked about loan officers who engage home buyers early. And they said this, I like to say this a lot, but they said at the point of thought, win more business, see higher customer satisfaction and earn greater loyalty. And so their study said that 43% of the borrowers that initiated contact with a lender, or I'm sorry, 43% of borrowers initiated contact with a lender when they were just considering home ownership. So, you know, 43%, so 4 out of 10, at the first time someone thinks about buying a home, they were seeking to engage with a lender or a loan officer. And then of the originators who built this early bond with this consumer, those consumers were 20% less likely to contact another lender in the process and 54% less likely to submit multiple loan applications.
Wow.
And then the last stat that this was really interesting, the last stat that J.D. Powers, and this is all data coming from their study, right? That same cohort of consumer, their likelihood of recommending that lender, that loan officer, jumped to 69%, which was greater. It was better by 5% from the year prior. And so it just screams that not only is getting involved in a consumer's life, financial life early in their process, smart and good business and the right thing to do, but it's how you build a sustainable, you know, client base. And if you do well by that first time home buyer who you may have nurtured for 6, 12, 18 months, who do you think they're going to refer their friends, their families, their cousins, their siblings to when it's time for them to start, you know, the home buying process?
Right. No, I think you're so right. And I do think LOs by nature are they're not in the sexiest part of the transaction, right? We all know that that's on the real estate side of things. But in the long-term relationship side of things, there is definitely more opportunity in my eyes for that real estate, or I'm sorry, for the LO to maintain a longer relationship and have multiple opportunities to help and service that same client. And like you said, I feel like, and again, I'm biased. I am a realtor, so I can say this. We're all realtors. Right. I made this joke with someone the other day that reached out to me on Instagram. And I was like, oh, you're in Utah. Let me guess, you're an agent. He was like, yeah, how did you know? I was like, well, guess who else is? Right. Because that's just kind of the way that it goes. But not everyone is an MLO.
Right.
And so I do think that there is a stronger opportunity there, but it will fall to the people who actually make the most of it, to those who are willing to put the time and the investment into nurturing their borrowers and who understand that it may take time and it could take multiple different touch points to stay relevant to them.
Yeah.
You mentioned personal branding, and I want to come back to this because this is, I feel like it's one of the buzzwords that is just so hot right now. And I think it's because so many people are actually having to think about how they're represented online, how their social media presence may be either acting as a hindrance or an attractor for new consumers and new customers. Let's talk about personal branding a little bit. What are your kind of favorite tips for people who are really just starting to think about what they should, maybe not even starting to think about it, who have been working on it, but don't feel like it's working as well as they want it to? What advice do you have?
Yeah, so I'll start by saying, and this is my opinion only, so people can throw them at me. I think there's probably only two or three mortgage company brands. And honestly, there's probably really one or two, frankly, that the company brand means more than the actual individual loan officer. Okay. And so if that's the case, and let's just say there's five, if we want to play devil's advocate, still that's a small number of corporate, you know, company brands, right? And we know that our business is fragmented, right? There's thousands of mortgage companies. Consumers, there's nobody that has more than 10% market share as a lender in our business, right? So if we set aside those biggest of the big brands that, you know, seemingly can do without a loan officer, even though they can't because of all the regulatory requirements that you educate on all the time. And if we believe that that's the case, then that means the other 995 corporate brands that exist are less significant in the eyes of the consumer than the individual loan officer. And this is why I think the personal brand of the individual loan officer at large means more than the company brand in the eyes of the consumer. Mm. So, you know, we all hear this and we talk about it all the time. We do business with people that we know, like, and trust, right? And brands, company brands, it's hard to know them. I guess you could trust or like the brand, but it's hard to really know. And so it comes down to the people at the end of the day. And so as it relates to personal branding, for me, it's all about showing up and being visible in your community. And that doesn't mean you have to do what we're doing. It doesn't mean you have to be on social media. If you're business model is hyper local, and showing up means, you know, being, you know, in the community center conducting first time home buyer webinars, you know, being in the library doing other education, whatever that looks like, showing up is that's part of the personal brand of that individual. I happen to think, though, that that's a pretty closed minded way of thinking about building your personal brand. And it's never been easier for us to build our brand by just hitting the red button and talking into this thing, right? And then sharing it on, you know, the social platform. And so here's what I would tell loan officers that are hesitant to get on social, and more important, you know, use video as a mechanism to show up. When we talk about the next generation of home buyers, so like really the Gen Zs, even if you're referred to a Gen Z first time home buyer by their agent, you can bet one of the first things they're doing is looking you up on social.
100%.
And so LaDonna, you said, as you teed up this topic, you talked about social presence. I would actually argue that lack of social presence is actually a bigger hindrance than being on social. In other words, not being on social and being able to be found is probably going to kill you 8 out of 10 times with a Gen Z first time home buyer. So yeah. at a minimum, create a Facebook page, right?
Right.
You don't have to be on every platform. Like I don't think I'm not on all the platforms, but
you're not on TikTok.
I don't think so. I've been working on my Lamar Hendrick dance. It's not suitable for viewing at this point.
I'm gonna help you with that one. I think you mean Kendrick Lamar.
Oh, that guy.
I'll help you out. Oh, I'll help you out.
I just got boomered. That one's gonna be clipped and shared wildly. Thank you all. did I just call him Lamar Kendrick?
You did. You just created a whole subgenre.
Oh my God.
That's really what you
did. He's a new country singer. Not being on social can be as detrimental as being on social can be powerful, right? So I think you have to have some presence because that's where people are going to check you out. And then, people are like, well, what's my personal brand? Well, I don't know. What do you like in life? What do you like to do when you're not writing loans? You know, that's your personal brand. That's who you are as a person. And so I think just because you're a loan officer doesn't mean you have to go on Facebook and talk about loan officer stuff all the time. People want to know what you're about, who you're about, what you like to do when you're not writing loans. And so that becomes part of that personal brand strategy. Let people know who you are.
Yes. No, I think you're so right. And for me myself, this is an area that I've had to toy with and really explore because trust me, if there's something that no one wants to hear about, it's mortgage education, right? Like if I put a video out there on NMLS requirements, people are going to be like, yeah, okay, cool. Talk to me about it in November. I don't want to hear about it now. So instead, I've had to figure out exactly what I want to build my own personal messaging around. And I think I'm starting to really dial in that voice, but it has taken some exploration. I don't like to share a lot of things about my personal life. It's my personal life. Yeah. I like to keep it that way, but I do really love networking. I do really love connecting with other people. I do love helping really cool people connect to other really cool people. And that's been a really great way for me to create and get my own voice out there while still working in elements of my business.
I mean, what we're doing right now, this is part of your personal brand, right? As it relates to our industry. And I think I love it. It's awesome.
Bingo. Thank you. Thank you. So, okay. Back to 2025, the challenges that so many LOs are facing. What do you see happening by way of the financial app and AI advancements that are coming down the pike? Because I do think so much of how people conduct their business is going to change over the next year due to those advancements. What are you kind of seeing? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy how fast the AI is moving. And it's a big, AI is this huge, wide, covers a lot of different technologies.
It's an umbrella term at this point.
But it's somewhat scary how fast it's moving. So there's this guy, Luke Shankula. We talked about it on your other show. We talked about Luke. He just posted the other day how he's using AI he spent 3 hours training this tool with him talking on video. Mm-hmm. And then he's been able to write scripts, probably heavily leaning on AI to help him write scripts, really good scripts, by the way. And then he appends the script into this piece of technology that then takes all the learnings of those, that 3 hours of video that he did on it. And like at first glance, like he posted a video of him talking, thought for sure it was Luke.
Would never know.
It was AI. Now, I don't think we're moving down this path where AI is more involved than ever in the loan manufacturing process. But I think we're quite a ways away from AI replacing loan officers. It's just not a reality. What I tell loan officers is you don't need to be fearful of AI replacing you. You need to be fearful and aware of loan officers that are leveraging AI because they're going to beat you. And what does that look like? I'll give you an example. I just said Lamar Hendricks. So you're going to shred me and I'm going to bring that up. This is like a little self-defense moment. So
good.
I'm just using basic ChatGPT, right? Mm-hmm. But I've trained my GPT. It understands who I am, what my company does, how our product serves the industry. I spent a lot of time training it on who the ideal client profile is, right? And so I now can wake up in the morning if I don't have an idea for content. Mm. I can just drop a 2-sentence idea into my GPT and it'll give me like, here's 3 things I could think about, you know, creating a video or writing content on. And so I think it's just accelerating all of our ability to communicate at scale and more efficiently. We all need to be very cautious that we don't just copy paste and post because you don't want to feel and seem robotic. But that's where I see, AI is just really being this great equalizer for capacity to do work and get things done in a more efficient manner.
I like that. I like that a lot, of being an equalizer of the capacity, because I think you're right. That is where I see the most opportunities coming into the picture of improving some of those inefficiencies, allowing you to work smarter, not harder. Why not? I mean, I've done the same thing. I've trained my chat to know my voice, my cadence, the type of questions that I like to ask in conducting interviews. And now I don't lean on it all the time, but you better believe that if I need it, I have it right here to where if I need to fall back on something, it's really easy for me to say, okay, I want to take that question, but I want to make it more my own and I want to relate it right to this. And it has sped my process up significantly. And I am all for getting our time back. Yeah. I really am. Our time is so precious that we need to be actually just taking advantage of the tools that give us more of it. So I'm with you. I think that is without a doubt the biggest opportunity that comes from all of it. Okay, well, you know what? Actually, I want to divert just a little bit because I have kind of a funny story for you. So we talked about your book, and I always like to bring it up again just because I think it is so important for people to pick up. So Rethink Everything You Know About Being a Next Generation Loan Officer. Co-written with Kyle Draper, and then 37 other authors in there.
Yeah.
So I finally got my own version of it.
All right.
And I'm not kidding when I say to you, I devoured the first half of it. It was such a quick and easy and consumable read. And I was so excited because I figured I'd be able to finish it on this last trip that I was on. Well, I left it in my TSA bin.
Oh, no.
I get out and I'm boarding and I'm like, I don't have my book, but hopefully someone else, maybe it's a happy accident, someone else gets to pick it up and learn from it. So my new book is coming today. It will be delivered today. All right. And I cannot wait to finish it. But I sincerely mean it when I say there's so much great information in there that will help you be a better LO. It will help you be a better salesperson. It will help you approach your deals differently. It will help you look at the way you approach your online presence. There's just so much high quality information in there that to spend the $15 or whatever it is on Amazon, go spend that money. Go spend it right now. It is such a worthwhile investment. So
thank you so much for putting
your time into that. It is time well spent for sure.
It has been one of the most rewarding, you know, things that I've done in my career is being part of that. And the quality of the output, we blown away, right? And you've already figured this out. I didn't write anything in the book. I think I wrote an introduction. That was it. My contribution was being smart enough to know to get out of the way and let the experts share their expertise. And that's really why this thing works so well. It's become this community of itself. And it's not a paint by numbers. Like, it's not telling you do these 10 things, but I think in every chapter, there's like questions that you might ask yourself that will force you to think about something differently. And that's the whole idea, is rethink. Let's not just fall on the old ways of doing things and expect different results. That's the definition of insanity. And so I'm excited to still today, it's been a year since we published and people are still buying it and still getting value. So I thank you so much for that.
Of course. Of course. I do really appreciate too your action items in there and all of the QR codes where you make it so easy to connect with the co-authors of the book. And I think that in and of itself can be a great resource for people who are maybe needing some inspiration right now. So why not use it? Why not leverage it? Well, my friend, we are within minutes of when I know and promise to have you out of here. Thank you again for doing this with me. It's always such a pleasure to sit down and chat with you. I look forward to the next one because I'm sure it'll be just as good, right?
Exactly.
Thank you, Brian. I appreciate you. One more quick thing, just because I want to make sure that if people need to find you, they know where to find you. Where's the best place to find you, connect with you?
LinkedIn. That's where I live.
You do a great job at it. It's a masterclass in and of itself. So thank you again. Thanks for being here.